Hi, everyone. This is Not About the Weather, episode 5, coming to you today with a very special themed episode, the first of what will be our themed episodes in future, where we'll gather to have a hype and a gripe about a specific topic. This one is a bit, well, it's very, very currently relevant, but it's a little bit outside the box in terms of what our normal discussion would be in terms of pop culture and entertainment, because we are going to be talking about the US election coming up next week. So the first thing that we just need to say about this is that obviously we appreciate that people do not often want politics mixed in their pop culture. They do not want to, see their shows, or they do not want to see, you know, actors or whatever. Anything that they do for escapism, you know, get into their head about politics. It's a big part of why, you know, people like entertainment, is to get away from real world problems. So if you do not want to hear about the election, we appreciate that. And please just skip this episode and come back to us next time with a normal episode where we are not, you know, talking very strongly about this current political situation and probably some pretty partisan viewpoints. That being said, a lot of what we will be talking about will be a bit of the pop culture that has been surrounding the election, not necessarily like the ins and outs of the actual politics, but there might be some of that too. So it's a little bit outside the box of what was planned for this podcast, but seeing it is the biggest news story in the world, I guess, currently, we thought that we would just go in hard with that, because we have a guest on the podcast today who is someone who's been working on both this election campaign and the previous election campaign in a very sort of minor but interesting way, which is a friend of ours, Megan, and we are also joined by Brittany and Ariana. And we'll, yeah, talk a little bit first about what Megan is doing to do with the election and then go on from there. If you want to reach us at all, you can find us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast, our Facebook, NATW Podcast, like Facebook/that, Instagram and Gmail, same handle. The website's notaboutthe.weatherpodcast.com, which you can also follow as a Tumblr account. Or if you want to submit us an email message or check out this podcast or Not Another Teen Wolf podcast on their Hub page, it's just natwpodcast.com. So as I said, joined by Ariana and Brittany, and as we mentioned last week, I think some point during the episode last week, we thought we might get together to have a hype and gripe about the election on a world scale, because it's, everyone all over the world has really varying viewpoints about it. So for that to happen, we brought on this guest of ours, Megan, who is a friend of mine who I've known for over 10 years, who actually comes from the UK. She's not a US citizen, but she volunteered for 6 months on the last Obama campaign, was in the States for that election, and then flew back for his inauguration, works for a non-profit activist organization in the UK, and is currently seconded to an American version of the same kind of company working on a campaign as well. And in her spare time, she is she's in the States and doing that as her actual job, and in the spare time working specifically on the political campaign for Hillary, volunteering, phone banking and stuff like that. So it's a bit of an interesting position for like a non-American citizen to be doing. And I thought it might be an interesting thing to talk about, what the perspective looks like for her, what the perspective looks like for obviously our citizens here, and what the perspective looks like for me, who is both a foreigner and not a professional political activist. So Brittany and Megan know each other. We all hung out in New York earlier in the year, and Ariana has not met Megan, but hopefully this will be a good conversation. And I was just wondering if there was anything before we got started that you girls wanted to ask Megan about, like what the hell she's doing, or like why she's doing this, or anything like that.
Well, I feel like Megan is by far the most interesting person on here today, so I'm just excited to hear what she's going to say, because she's probably more educated than all of us. So
it also explains why she was so excited when we were eating pizza that she got a Hillary Clinton button when I met her.
I was very excited about that.
I don't know if I remember getting a Hillary button while eating pizza.
I think, well, we ate pizza on the day of the New York Democrat primary, and I just found out that Hillary had won the primary, so I was probably, like, really excited, right, and I had the button on my badge because it was primary day, and I probably went on a bit of a rant about how much I love Hillary and confused Britney, so.
I was very confused. Okay. But now it all makes sense months later.
You're in good company. Beyonce is rocking that pantsuit for Hillary tonight, so.
Yeah, she is.
Have you guys had like many conversations with people not from America about, you know, what's been going on, or even like, you know, anyone like Megan who is actively working to help your election who's not a citizen?
I personally haven't. I mean, besides when I was in London over the summer and I just felt the need to apologize to people whenever they found out that I was from America. They're like, like they would be like, oh, you're from, where are you from? I'm like, oh, you know, New Jersey and America. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. So the general consensus is like, it's not great. But then I would be like, oh, I'm so sorry for Brexit. Like, it was like a lot of mutual apologizing for our countries being awful.
I'm also sorry for Brexit, so.
So, Megan, I guess tell the nice people why you are doing what you're doing and a little bit of the difference between your actual job and then the volunteering stuff.
Okay, so I'm doing what I'm doing because I got really invested in American politics about 8 years ago around the first Obama election. And I actually wanted Hillary to win back then because I've just found her incredible for a very long time. When I knew she was going to run this time round, was like, I just really want to go out and do some stuff for the election. So I work for an organization in the UK that's like, it's called like People Powered Movement, where we have like lots of members across the UK and we work together to help them lobby for change, et cetera, et cetera. And we have like a sister organization of sorts in America who does the same thing. And they're running a huge like Never Trump campaign, and they're getting all of their members to mobilize for the election. So my day job while I'm out here is helping them with their Never Trump campaign. So I'm helping them with like some social media stuff and some like design work and some comm stuff and things like that. But because I love Hillary, in my spare time, I'm actually staying at a place in Brooklyn that's like 3 minutes down the road from her headquarters and from the Brooklyn field office, where they do lots of volunteer work. And because I ran like phone banks and things for Obama back in 2012, I'm just spending all of my spare time down there helping them with their volunteering. So that is what I'm doing.
So what happens when you phone bank? Like, do you just call people and be like, hey, are you voting this year? Or like, what happens?
So I am now more running the phone banks as opposed to making the phone calls. But yeah, you essentially, so we call people at the Hillary phone banks that are likely Democrat voters, and that's people that are registered Democrats or are not registered to a party or registered independent, but have a demographic that they think makes them likely to be voting Democrats or would support Hillary if they voted. So it's calling them to find out if they are registered, if they're supporting Hillary. And then if they are, up until this weekend, we've been encouraging them to vote early, because obviously lots of states in America let you vote before Election Day. And then as of this weekend, it's more about, hey, you're voting. Do you know where the polling station is? What time are you going to go? Take friends with you, that sort of thing. Because there's this like idea in the campaigning world that the more you ask someone how and when and where they're going to vote, the more likely they are to do it, because it's like psychologically fixed in their brain. So it's like about reminding people to vote and getting them to make a plan as to when and where they are.
Do you ever get anyone being like, why are you British on the phone or for Obama? Like, because I know you did a lot of the calls for Obama.
I actually didn't really. I get like other volunteers in the phone bank being like, oh, so why are you over here? And then I just say, because I love Hillary. Or, you know, probably something a bit more than that. But no one really ever asked when I like rang people. But I guess maybe they could think that I'm like joint citizenship or an expat.
Yeah, they probably just assume that you are a citizen, that you moved here.
I think it's probably not normal unless you're being paid for it for someone to go and like volunteer for the election campaign in a country that isn't their own. So they probably would be like, nobody would do that. Clearly she must be a citizen, is my assumption.
And you're doing some like door-to-door stuff as well, like tomorrow or like whenever, and I know you did other trips. So is that like going to swing states specifically, or like what happens then?
Yeah, so tomorrow we are going to Philadelphia. I am the bus captain, which basically means I train all of the other all of the other people on the bus on the way about how to like talk to people at the door and whatever. So yeah, and you have like again houses of people that we think that we know are registered and that we think are likely to be supporting Hillary, just knocking on the door and making sure they do.
Wow, that's it's really intense, because one of the things about voting in Australia is that it's compulsory. So it is not, you don't have this much manpower invested in this and presumably money spent. I mean, I know there's volunteers, but like this is not part of political campaigns in my country because voting is compulsory. Everyone knows that you have to vote. You get fined if you don't, and you just show up and vote, or you don't, and then you pay like a $25 fine. And that's kind of it. Like there's no, hey, vote. Nothing like this at all. Mm-hmm. So it just makes me wonder, like, why voting would be compulsory versus non-compulsory, and, like, whether it is, like how is it, like, more freedom to vote, to have it compulsory or to have it non-compulsory, you know, and how much, I guess, if it was compulsory, how much money would be saved, or, like, what's being wasted energy-wise here versus, like, the benefits of it being not compulsory. So I don't know. Does anyone have any thoughts on the not compulsory voting? Because it's, to me, that's really unusual. It was almost my gripe, but I don't really know if it is a gripe or not. Like, I don't really understand the flip side.
I have strong feelings on this, because every time you post on Twitter about this, I'm like, oh, Natalie, you just don't get America. Like, I think it's really important that it be a choice, because even not voting is in itself a choice. It's a pretty shitty choice, in my opinion, but it is a choice you're making. And I think that, like, I think that's important that we have that choice.
I don't know. I feel like that if there's going to be elected leaders, that it needs to be a representation of everyone in the country, and that everyone in the country needs to know what they're voting for when they vote. And so, as opposed to just, you know, the people that didn't vote affecting the outcome of those who did, if you know what I mean. I feel like everyone should be in it together if we've decided to have a democracy.
But then don't you feel like there's probably a lot of people who are voting without knowing what they're voting for, just because they don't want the fine? So they're just like, oh, whatever.
I think they know enough. They'd know enough about it. And I think that the lines in terms of like what the parties stand for are a little clearer here, if you know what I mean. You kind of, you know, all you need to do is know, you know, the party name, and you know what you're doing, basically. And I think that's where more of the energy of the campaigning goes for, you know, goes towards, like, if, you know, the ads and stuff like that will be like describing like the various policies that they stand for.
So I have this thought around like compulsory voting and things, where I quite like the idea of compulsory voting, because I get that not voting is a choice when it's a protest, like you're saying, I don't believe in this system, so I'm not going to vote. But what I would rather do, at least in the UK, which is slightly different, is people, it's compulsory to vote, but you can spoil your ballot. And when people do the counting of the ballots, they make a note of how many ballots are spoiled. And to me, that makes it more of an intended protest not voting, if that makes sense. And that it's in public record and history. So if they could see that actually in one particular state or constituency, the spoiled ballots outweighed some of the other candidates, then to me, that would be like, well, that's a clear protest. People are saying, I don't like this democracy. I don't think there's real choice in our democracy, so I'm spoiling my ballot. And so I kind of think if voting was compulsory and people had to go vote and make that protest choice, it would be more of a clear protest, and it would stop that kind of narrative of, oh, young people just don't vote because they can't be bothered, or the idea that people aren't voting because of X, Y, and Z. And it would make it a clearer distinction between people that are voting or not voting out of protest, as opposed to people that are just can't be bothered.
Another thing that happens here, I don't know, probably happens there as well, is that, number one, because it's compulsory, people, you know, automatically know what they're kind of know what they're doing more when they go up, because they've had to do it, you know, however many times a year or whatever decade for their whole life. But they also just have the major parties out the front that have how to vote cards, and they basically give you the form that has the numbers that they're like, if you want to support this party, just copy this form. like copy the numbers on this form onto your ballot and then you go and do it. And that's kind of the least thought you'd have to put into it. And that works pretty successfully in terms of people who are like, okay, I know that I'm left wing, but don't know the specific names of the people or whatever. Like I know that I'm left wing, so therefore I'm going to vote for Labour. Or I know that I'm really left wing, so I'm going to vote for the Greens, if you know what I mean. So that's kind of what happens here. People are automatically a bit more aware of what they're doing when they go to vote because it's compulsory. And then they, when they do, I don't know if that's even, if that's allowed in the States, the how to vote cards. I'm not sure if it does it in the UK, but it's certainly allowed.
Yes, we get so much, we get so much mail.
When you go on the day,
too much mail.
Yeah, when you go on the day, will there be like a campaigner who's like, oh, I want to vote Democrat, and they hand you a thing that says what to fill out for your local area?
No, because they have to be nonpartisan, the polling places.
Yeah, you can't do anything within like 100 yards of it.
People campaign at polling places here right out the front. Like that's where people get the most education probably. Yeah, like they're like, oh, here's what we stand for, and they're talking about it on the day.
Yeah, that's illegal in the UK and the US.
Really?
Yeah. There's strict rules against electioneering outside a polling station.
Oh, it's very common here, so I'm not sure where they got away with that. But I feel like
that would lead to a lot of like like right now in the US we're very afraid of like intimidation at polling places. And to me that seems like it would really help amp that up.
Australians aren't really like that though. Like just as a culture, like they don't really like someone would probably call the cops if that happened. Like we don't really bully people, like, as a nation, kind of. Like, that's not a sales tactic that anyone would use here. And it's kind of like people know what they want. They go up to the person, they get it. Like, each party has their little stand or their little bit of postering. And it's and this is kind of the same issue with welfare and the same fact that we're
let's not get into this right now though.
Well, no, it all comes from the fact that Australians aren't very like, yes, there's some major problems here with all sorts of things and racism and stuff, but there is a cultural attitude that is much less competitive and much more like all in this together, and stuff just doesn't get that aggressive here. Like that's what it is. And that people think that they deserve to help each other as opposed to deserve to be insular, which I think is the difference of a major difference of culture. And it's why people are like, oh, everyone's so chill in Australia. I don't think we're that chill, but that is where it comes from, because as a nation, we're culturally like, yeah, of course you deserve to be helped by your fellow neighbor or whatever. Like that is the quote unquote mateship. Look it up on Wikipedia, is the aspect the country and the cultural identity was founded on. So,
okay. Well, speaking of cultural identity.
So, yeah.
Like, even going back to, I mean, honestly, most people who don't vote in America, it's not because they're protesting. It's because they're being lazy and don't want to stand in a line or whatever, which is unfortunate. But I even feel like that it's important to have that choice, and that's probably because I'm an American, and I feel like in America, like, we really value our choices and our freedoms, even if those freedoms suck sometimes. Like, so I think it's important that people have the choice. But it's important that people have the choice to be irresponsible and not do that and not go vote if they don't want to.
Terrible. I think that's a really terrible attitude to have. If that's kind of what people are like, that's what they mean to say when they mean that they're being free and stuff like that. I just don't know why that would be something anyone would want. Like, it just is completely bizarre to me.
That's why you don't live here, Natalie.
No, I mean, it's not why I don't live there, but it's a factor of not living there, I suppose, that they're not understanding. I just don't understand how that's in any way a positive.
It's a cultural thing that we've, like, it goes back to the freaking founding fathers with like our First Amendment rights, which is unfortunately that sometimes leads to other things. But we value that First Amendment right so much that we put up with other shit that it comes with because we're trying to protect it. Like, that's why we have like, oh, Fox News sucks, but it needs to be protected. Right. Everyone would rush to protect it because that's freedom of the press. So even when people are shitty, We have to protect their freedoms. Otherwise, our freedom could be taken away later on.
All right. I mean, I'm not really sure how that works, but okay.
It's okay. You don't have to understand. It's okay because you don't live here, Natalie, so it's okay.
I know.
You don't have to understand. The times when I find it frustrating is like the First Amendment and freedom of speech and everything is the people that are sometimes the strongest proponents of freedom of speech in some areas are the first people to like call out or like criticize or insult Colin Kaepernick when he does his kneeling during the national anthem, or say that flag burning should be completely banned, or that English should be the national language, the official national language of America. So that's what I find it quite like ironic or frustrating, is that people will be like, it's the most important freedom, unless they're using it to do something that I disagree with, because America.
Think that like does not like you guys seem to think that it's such a big deal, this freedom of speech thing. Like, do you think that other countries don't have that too? Because they do, they just don't shout about it all the time. Like, everyone has the same, like, at least everyone in the Western world has the same kind of like laws and stuff about that, but they just, they don't go around like waving flags about it. They're just like, duh, if you know what I mean. Like, I feel like it's like hammered home in a way that like is like almost like unnecessary if people would just not dicks.
I would suggest that whilst I could talk about it for forever, this is more about American patriotism and not the election. we could probably move more onto that true. Without talking about that.
No, that's true. I just, when Americans talk about freedom,
no,
I really
but you see the reason why. Yes, but that has deep roots in the way that our country was founded and the way that, like, I mean, you watched Hamilton, Natalie. Like that's what we're actually taught in school, and the
I
way
still
that
aren't really.
But that's because Australians are founded on the chill mate founding, and we're on a more combative founding, I guess.
We so still it's... like to think of ourselves as the scrappy underdog, even though we're not. Like, that's our mentality.
I mean, historically, Australia was more of an underdog. They
were generally a prisoner colony.
Sorry, everyone.
But you see, like when the Constitution was created, this was the First Amendment to show that it was the most important. Like, that's why that's what we're taught in school. That's why it's something that we try work so hard to protect.
I don't understand why there hasn't been a massive cultural shift.
It's okay. You don't have to understand.
Yeah, no, I'm asking for an explanation as to why there hasn't been a massive cultural shift from young people, from educated people, from the general population of the world, the way that we view human rights now becoming more left-wing. And I'm not saying this is necessarily a numerical 50-50 population. This election is showing that problem. But the things that are, like, by the higher laws, like the UN and whatever, like legal versus illegal or accepted versus not accepted, I don't understand why there hasn't been a massive, massive, massive cultural shift of people wanting to be less combative and more, you know, like more beneficial to each other.
First of all, I feel like that's really unfair to say, because I think there has been a cultural shift in doing that. But also a lot of things are regional. So, I mean, this is a very big country, and not only is it big, but every state, every county has its own set of values that are very different from the county next to it or the state next to it, because we have such different places that we live in. And because so many people are from other places, there's so many different cultures all at once. So each city basically has its own culture. So...
Yeah. No, it's fine. I want to move on anyway. But it just confuses me as to why. I guess if it is about the freedom of speech and that kind of thing, or just whatever they seem to consider freedom in general as meaning,
being made to do something is not a freedom. That's basically what it comes down to. Being forced to do something is not a freedom.
What kind of things? Like
being okay. So this started with being compulsory voting. Being forced to vote is not a freedom. So that's why it has to be a choice for us here. That's why we feel like it has to be a choice.
That's so weird. I don't understand.
Now, I understand that you think it's weird, but every time you say it's weird, it makes me feel like I have to explain myself, and so we're never going to move on.
Yeah, this is what your problem is with when you're talking about our politics, of how combative we are. It's because we get that attitude in our parties, even. Like, it's like, oh, well, that's weird. I don't understand it. And so then we try to explain it, and it's like, okay, but it's weird. I don't understand it. So it's the same argument that Democrats are having in between parties. It's the same argument that Democrats are having with Republicans. It's the same. This is what's happening in this election, basically. And what's happening right now is, yeah, well, that's weird. So, and I think it's wrong. Okay, that's great. But even if we try to say something, it's dismissed anyway.
I agree. I think that is definitely something that's happening. For, like, usually, I'm really good about this and I just don't say anything. But what frustrates me, I think, is when people, so like, for Natalie, I'm not angry at you. I love you. You know that.
That's okay.
But like, what's frustrating for me is when people from outside another culture are like, that's weird. And I'm like, it's weird to you because you haven't grown up in this and that's not how you live. And also probably I feel very touchy because I probably have lots of issues being like a minority and stuff and people being like, that's weird. So I obviously have deep-seated issues. But that's what bothers me. So like Democrat, Republican, I usually just say like, whatever, you're not going to change your mind. Because I know people don't change their minds if you've already made up your mind. But I personally feel like rather when looking into another culture, you should be like, let me try and understand why people are like that instead of just being like, oh, no, that's different from what I think.
I mean, that is what I am doing when I say that's weird, like to be that's sort of just how I talk. That's what I'm saying when I'm saying these things. I'm like, where is the reasoning for this? Like, give me where this comes from. That being said, I don't know, like I do understand that like democracy means choice, but I feel like it's still not like a fair polling of the nation. Like, I feel like the elected officials, for example, Brexit, like I don't want to talk about Brexit at length, but Brexit was a non-compulsory vote. And the voting, like the winning margin was what, Megan, like 54%?
It was 54% of people who, of the voters, of the people that voted for Brexit.
The win was 54% of voters. 52% of voters out of a less than 70% turnout, which is not actually 50% of the country, if you know what I mean. Like, and to me, that's like,
but
not
it's
a fair 50% choice
of the people who cared enough to show up.
But everyone should
which
care.
Sucks.
That's my thing. Everyone should care.
Everyone should care. In a perfect world, everyone would care.
Yeah.
But
so that's why I think it should be compulsory, and that it should be, people should be raised knowing that it's compulsory, therefore they would care. And I think that's why it should be compulsory. I do get that the ultimate democracy is like you have the choice to do whatever, and therefore the freedom of, you know, the freedom of it is to vote or not vote, and that the people getting elected are the reflection of the people who care to go out and vote. But I also feel like if they have the choice not to vote because they're lazy or whatever, I feel like a lot of those people like aren't necessarily bad people and not necessarily people who would elect someone you hate or whatever. And if all of those people had like 5% more like investment or education, or if it was compulsory, so they're like, I guess I'll get off my ass and go and do it, that they would make choices that maybe reflected the world better, if you know what I mean. Like, this is what people who aren't super crazily politically active care about.
But
and maybe they care about.
You don't know that
being
for
shit.
Sure.
No,
maybe
I don't,
it would swing the other way. I mean, it would swing, it can swing either way. It just like now it does. The people who care aren't necessarily altruistic, as we have seen.
So I think with me, I think my, as someone that like thinks a lot about politics all the time and spends a lot of time working on elections and wishing more people would vote, I'm like, yes, voting should be compulsory. And it doesn't feel weird to me because I spend all my time wishing more people would vote. And I imagine to you, Nat, it feels like it makes sense to you and it feels like something that would work because it's what you've grown up and it has always worked. And I do think it would work and I don't think it would take away the choice, but I can also see why it would feel more okay and all right with you and just like the normal thing to do than it would for Ariana and Britney and all the people in America that would not want compulsory voting. So it's something that I want to make my job more happy, but
I just have no, like, and I don't want to say like empathy because I'm not like trying to be a dick about it, but I have no comprehension of how like people think that it's normal, like, and as I said, because like if it comes from this whole constitution, we don't study the constitution of Australia. We have one. It has a lot of the same things in it as other nations that separated from Britain, as we did as well. But we aren't it isn't shoved down our throats, so we don't care, if you know what I mean. We're like, yeah, of course I'll vote. Like, that's what we do. And of course I'll pay my taxes to government Medicare. You know, like, the things that we take as a given and I guess that you would call being forced to do something, we never learn to object to that. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, because most of those things are quite altruistic things. Like, we're not forced to do anything that isn't altruistic, I think. And what bothers me about the American choice, and this is what I said the other day when I was like, the choices that seem inherently selfish, is that the things that people seem to object to being forced to do, you know, whether that's like the government healthcare situation or anything like that, they all seem to be like people objecting to being forced to do something that's ultimately altruistic. Like, that they're like, no, it's me for me. I don't want to have to do something that has anything to do with other people. And I think that's a horrible attitude.
But that's not because they're bad people, Natalie. There's reason.
To me, that makes someone a bad person.
Are you going to make me defend Republicans now? Is that what I have to do now?
No, but I'm curious as to how being, like, as to not wanting to be altruistic could be.
It's not about not wanting to be altruistic. It's about wanting things to work the best for the most people. And I understand that because of, in Australia, you guys do pay more taxes and more things are government funded. You feel like that's the best way. Not everybody in America feels that way. And the reason is because not everything that's government funded works, unfortunately. Like, people who are Republican or who believe in small government believe that things that are privatized work better, which objectively most of the time they do. Democrats believe that there should be more government is because then you can help more people. Even if the school is shitty, at least they're going to school. You know what I mean? But Republicans believe, but if we just made like all the hospitals private, then all the hospitals would be good. And Democrats are like, but then maybe not everybody could afford hospitals. And Republicans are like, yeah, we could. And Democrats are like, no, you can't. So that's where the divide comes from.
I mean, the only, to be honest, the only viewpoints that I've heard here with the argument with the, I totally get what you mean. Like, obviously, if something is being paid for privately, it's going to be more efficient and, like, you know, more staff to user ratio and all of those kind of things, you know, if not enough money is being put into the government versions, totally understand that. But everyone I've ever heard from or spoken to, including people I used to be friends with, it's always been, they've always outright said, I've never heard that argument. Like, I've only heard people being like, I don't want to give money into a system that benefits other people because it's not my problem. And I can't accept that as a good person.
Well, I feel like you haven't talked to enough people, probably, because
I mean, it's probably true, but that's the world's wider view of what's going on with, you know, the Republican versus, because you said the other day, like, not all Republicans are racist assholes, and I totally believe that. That's not my, like, I think that things have gotten much worse with this election cycle, and I think that, you know, some of us are going to talk more about that later. But my viewpoint and the viewpoint of nearly everyone I know not in the States who's got any opinion into this, you know, not that our opinion counts for anything, that's how it looks, basically. It looks like that the Republican attitude is inherently selfish and therefore they're shitty people.
Should we talk about Hillary Clinton? That sounds fun.
Well, my gripe is actually something I genuinely want explained. Which is, we're going to do gripes first and then hype so we can end on being a little bit more positive and excited. Had a lot of introduction here, but my gripe has been watching, again, okay, so the compulsory voting came up because the first thing that occurs to me, not even about, you know, the right to choose, I never even thought about it like that, was what a waste of money. Like, what a waste of money, like, trying to, like, for the amount of money and effort being put in just to get people to vote, like, wow, that's huge. And then going on from that, so that's just totally bizarre to me. Like, the other thing going on from that is the same factor, what a waste of money, but also counterproductiveness of the open campaigning in the primaries, the competitiveness between members of the same party that leads to people who are, you know, people not voting for their party because they don't like who that party ended up choosing. And that's, I have no idea why that's a thing that exists. I like, to me, all that looks like is counterproductive. Obviously, there's the huge circumstance with Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders on the primaries. And then there's all of the Republican ones who any of them probably would have been better than Trump. And I don't understand how he ended up winning.
That's why he won, because back then they were too afraid to be competitive. And nobody wanted to be like, oh, no, like but, nobody wanted to say, no, Trump's a loser.
I mean,
and so that's why.
We can take this right down to the fact that I don't understand how Trump was allowed to run, because he's not a politician. Like for example, in my country, people are politicians professionally and they work their way up in their party. And then internally, the leader of the party is selected, and then you vote for the party. You don't get to choose the person. For example, we've had prime ministers get booted out of the job because the party has decided to fire them. And so even if we voted for a certain person to be prime minister, even when you go in on the day, you're not ticking Prime Minister Bill Clinton. It's not Bill Clinton. You're ticking the member for your local area. You're ticking your member of parliament. So we have no say in who the members of the party are. Like, there's a say in, you know, local elections and stuff. So I don't understand, first of all, why Trump was allowed to run, but on a secondary level, why there's open campaigning in the party that makes voters potentially not want to vote for the party based on who gets picked.
Okay. Well, Trump was allowed to run because he's an American and anybody can run. And because we like our choices, and it would really piss us off if people were making choices without us, or without our involvement. And also, George Washington didn't like parties. I'm not the biggest fan of them. But, and what was your other thing, Natalie? I forgot.
Well, just the counterproductiveness of the open campaigning during the presidential run, or between the members of the same party. For example, Hillary and Bernie. Like, how is
but
that not?
I don't think that there's okay. I actually don't think that that was this one. I mean, some Bernie supporters who refuse to let go are annoying, but I actually feel like this was a very productive Democratic campaign, because what ended up happening is that we got like the best ideas from both parties. And now that's Hillary's and the Democratic Party's platform. So we were able to take different ideas and use that. So like now she's taken some of his plans because she saw that that's what people wanted. So she was able to add that. So I feel like that was a very productive campaign this season.
I mean, as a concept though, I don't understand why this exists and why the parties aren't elected by actual, like the party leaders aren't elected by politicians. Like the party
because
leaders, not the party
the
in general.
But it's the
but
people
they really
voting.
Shouldn't have that much say when they don't know what they're talking about.
The people shouldn't have much say. Natalie, get out
not,
of
not at that. Not at that level. Not at that level. Like they're not politicians. They don't like, it doesn't make
but
any sense.
So that's like so 5 points. So you want
but
like.
I have represent- a few thoughts here.
But. The president doesn't represent a party. The president represents America, the American people. That's why we have to vote for our president. So nobody should be choosing them for us. It shouldn't be the most popular person in their party.
So my thing here is, A, the difference is obviously that we in both the UK and Australia now, which is why it's slightly different, is we have a prime minister.
Yeah,
parliamentary system. I would imagine that actually your Labour MPs or MPs in Australia are chosen by party members. It's just a lot of a smaller affair out there. Like their selection process is for MPs and candidates. And in the UK, we've had a similar thing with obviously Jeremy Corbyn becoming the Labour leader because the party members decided to elect him. Yay.
It is party members. That's true. It's the party members who can be members of the public. But not everyone is a party member. And it's no one near as close, as large as it
so
is in the States.
Most people, except for like some states, most of the people that vote in primaries are registered party members, if that makes sense. So actually it's a bigger country, so there are more people there. I understand it from that point of view. And I think the other thing is, unlike here, where obviously the party with, and in Australia, where the party with the most seats runs the government, in America, you can obviously have a Democratic president, as we have had for the last 8 years, but a Congress or a Senate that is not controlled by the Democrats. So it's electing a president is different to electing like party leaders, because the country isn't going to be run by one party majority. The thing that has frustrated me about the primary is that I love the platform that Hillary has ended up running on, and I don't resent Bernie Sanders running from that sense. What I did find really frustrating was that towards the end, Bernie Sanders' campaign kept talking about how it's a rigged election. And now, obviously, you can see that with the Trump campaign talking about how it's a rigged election. And so my frustration is that Bernie Sanders got a whole load of people excited about voting that had never voted before. But then he kept telling towards the end, there's going on about how, oh, it's rigged. So now all those people might be like, well, what's the point of me ever voting again because it's rigged? And now we have Trump going on about how it's rigged. So I'm frustrated that they sowed the seeds of the rigged election idea and also probably made a whole load of people that they'd previously got excited feel disenfranchised. So that's my frustration about the primaries. I understand why they have them in America because it is a different political system. I don't resent Bernie Sanders running, though I do resent some of the choices he made. But I especially resent that whole rigged narrative that he basically started.
It's unfortunate how, like, obviously many Bernie supporters are very smart people and they have listened to him and are still voting Hillary or still voting Democrat. But it's unfortunate that some people, like, he kind of start, like, even at the Democratic National Convention, like all of those people who were still like booing. And so it kind of feels like he started something that now even he can't control anymore.
Mm. Yeah. That quote that Susan Sarandon, who is obviously part of my gripe,
oh
was
my
throwing
God.
Around. So what was
so
it?
Random.
Bernie Sanders
Let's
once said that. Yeah, right. Bernie Sanders once said something the lines of, if I ever start telling you who to vote for, don't listen to me. You know I've been corrupt, Joss. That's me paraphrasing it badly. But something along those lines. And now people are like, well, you once said that if we ever tell you who to vote for, we shouldn't listen to you. So I'm not going to listen to you. Jill Stein. And then
wow.
I cry.
Susan Sarandon is the worst. She is like this embodiment of privilege that some people have where they feel like they can vote for a third party candidate because they just, if like Donald Trump gets elected, obviously they don't feel like there would be enough consequences.
But Ariana, she's voting with her conscience, you know, she's just voting with her conscience. Okay. And if you want to sell out, that's fine. But Susan Sarandon isn't going to sell out. Okay.
Oh my God. Anyway, we can go into that specifically now. Your issue with the third party.
Yes. Let's go. And then I have an excellent Jill Stein story that I actually did not tell you the full of it in the messaging. So I'll have to finish that story.
But yeah, so just to finalize there, to me that open competitiveness seems like it would send voters away. Like, if you know what I mean, like it would like, oh, well, it's the party I want to vote for, like the party with the values that I want to vote for, but that specific person isn't what I wanted, and they were just spent 6 months slagging off this other person, and like it seems like to like muddy the waters so much, and I don't know, and again, waste of money it feels like as well. I don't know.
Megan, can you tell us why voting for a third party candidate in this election is not a beneficial protest vote?
So my gripe was more about specifically, like, people, as we've established, can vote for who you want to. So sure, if you're going to vote for a third party candidate, you do you. What frustrates me is people have had a habit of saying, like myself included, that a vote for a third party candidate is a vote for Donald Trump, and that the people that are voting for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson come out with, you don't understand democracy, I'm voting for Jill Stein, not Donald Trump. And I'm just like, don't be obtuse. We're clearly not saying, right? We're not saying that you're literally ticking the box next to Trump. We're just saying that if you live in a swing state and you vote for anyone other than Hillary Clinton, your vote makes it more likely than Donald Trump that Donald Trump will win. You understand that. Don't pretend you don't know what I'm saying. Don't pretend you don't understand the seriousness and the implications of your vote for Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. If you really can't vote for Hillary, you do you, but don't pretend that what you're doing doesn't have like massive implications for what might happen on November 9th. That is my gripe. Don't be dumb, basically.
Yeah, I saw a really good tweet about this that I'm now trying to find. It was something about that situation where people who vote third party may going around, you know, if say Trump does win, or whatever, go around saying, oh, you know, it's not my fault. Like, you know, I didn't contribute to that. Like, you know, I didn't vote for him. I voted third party or whatever. And with, like, do they genuinely not have any consciousness of, like, how, like, figures work? Like, how numbers work? How that would, is it just, oh, my conscience is clear because I didn't vote for him? I'm like, no, you're not voting the, in my opinion, when you vote, you never, ever vote to put the best party in. You vote to keep the worst party out. That's my number one priority with voting. And so you do whatever you do. A lot of people do think Hillary is the best option and they're really excited for her. And I, you know, not an American citizen, and I don't know everything about what everyone stands for. But in my opinion, any voting, you vote to keep the worst out. You use your vote to keep the worst out. And that is not what they're doing by voting third party. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I think a lot of people are ignorant, and I think that that is what it is, Natalie. I think that they want to keep a clear conscience. They're like, they're both terrible, so I'm going to vote for this one that's pure.
Yeah.
Obviously, because they don't know enough to know that nobody
Jill Stein is
pure.
Not pure.
Yes, Jill Stein is not pure. Oh, gosh. So my story is that, so it was on Wednesday is Dia de los Muertos, which I'm sure you guys probably don't know what that is, but it's the Day of the Dead, which is a Mexican tradition, and I play in a mariachi band, and this girl plays in the mariachi band with me. So after we played, we went out to eat. So this white girl is sitting across from me in mariachi outfit with the Dia de los Muertos makeup, the calavera makeup on. So she's sitting there appropriating my culture, telling me how she's going to, how she hasn't decided yet who she's voting for, but she is thinking about voting for Jill Stein because she can appropriate my culture but not have to feel the full effects of my culture if Donald Trump is elected. So,
people.
It's just insane. And did you say anything to her?
She was like, I might vote for Jill Stein. I literally told her, I can't talk to you right now, and turned away. To the person next to me.
Oh, God.
So angry. I could not. I cannot deal with this white girl right now.
What do you play in the mariachi band?
I play the violin.
I did not know that. That's amazing.
It was going to be my two truths and a lie at some point.
Oh, you scored it now.
I was going to call it, like, how racist can you be?
Oh, my God. Wow, thanks. You can do that on an episode where we're not on, but Mitch is. And see what happens.
Many of you think I play in a mariachi band.
Ugh.
I do.
So we've had primaries. We've had third-party voting. I'm not sure if anyone else has any opinions on that. Brittany, is this a thing for you? There have been other elections where this has really ruined the situation, hasn't there?
I would just like to point out, Susan Sarandon also supported what's-his-face Nader.
Ralph Nader. Yeah. It was Ralph Nader and John Kerry, wasn't it? And Kerry didn't get in because of too
wasn't
many
it,
people.
I think
Gore.
It was two,
oh, was it Gore and Nader?
It was 2000. Yeah. It was Gore. It was Gore in Florida. So Nader took away votes from Gore in Florida, as we know how that ended.
Yeah, good times. Remember when that was...
Anyway, we're talking about the future. I know.
Like, I remember sitting at my desk in 2012 at work, having, like, panic attacks, like, being like, oh, my God, if Mitt Romney wins the election, I'm going to die. Like,
we didn't know how good we had it.
Now we look back on Mitt Romney, like, so nostalgically.
God, yes. Mitt Romney.
Like, you know what? He would have been fine.
remember in 2012 when the most scandalous things to happen in the debates were we no longer have as many bayonets and binders full of women? Remember when binders full of women was the most sexist thing in a debate?
Oh, my God. And before that, it was McCain who was pretty mild, honestly. Yeah. Like, he's not great, but he's pretty mild.
Yeah. And you know what? They're both kind of, I mean, Mitt Romney turned out to be kind of okay because he has not endorsed Trump yet, so.
No, I thought he actively didn't endorse
him. Yeah, he's been really critical.
Spoken against him.
Multiple times.
And the fact so many, like, places that have, you know, publications that have either never endorsed before or never endorsed a Democrat before, or Republicans who are like, you know, well, outright.
Donald Trump only has two endorsements, and one of them is from the KKK. I'm dead serious.
Holy shit, how is this real?
That's media endorsements. He's been before his endorsed by the official KKK paper.
Like, I'm so sorry, America. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about this. And I understand that apparently your idea of freedom includes anyone being allowed to run for president. But this should not have been allowed. He should have been arrested. Like, I'm sorry, but it should not.
Well, he still might be. He still has a trial.
Give him time.
For statutory rape.
It's just so, I just don't understand. Like, I don't understand how you don't have to have certain qualifications as a startup, but aside from that, I don't understand how he's not arrested. Speaking of that, Brittany, did you maybe want to talk about yours? Because this is, like, an issue that I think that, again, like, people outside the States might not be so clear on, and certainly it's sort of painting a bad name at the moment. As I said, in my country, if you're, like, quote-unquote liberal, the Liberal Party is our right-wing party here. I don't know why it's called the Liberal Party. It just is. But and then the Labour Party and Greens is sort of the ultra left-wing one, which does have quite a few Senate seats. Like, it makes a difference. People kind of know very much what you're like if you support one of those parties. It's very cut and dried in terms of, you know, how conservative you are and usually where you stand on social issues. So you were talking about the impression of Republicans that people have due to Trump versus due to what it actually is. And I'm not sure how
That
actually stands for you.
Not exactly. I mean, Trump has definitely heightened what I want to hit on. And because I feel like everyone's like, oh, if you're a Republican and you're voting for Trump, it's because, like, you hate 95% of the people who make up this country, which is true in some cases because that's how people are. My bigger thing is more of, see, it's a touchy line because I feel like everyone is like, oh, if you're a Republican, then you hate gay people, let's say, for example. And mm-hmm. that's not true at all. So we were having a conversation offline and it sort of touched on, like, these bigger ideas of, like, oh, if you hear that someone's a Republican, you know exactly how they're going to vote on every single issue. So, for example, when DOMA was up, people were like, oh, well, the Republicans are going to vote it down because that's what Republican values stand for. But I was listening to the episode of The West Wing Weekly this week, getting my pop culture in here, and the entire episode was about the episode The Portland Trip, which is an episode where they have basically DOMA but not DOMA on the floor for a vote. And the Josh Lyman is a Democrat, and he is basically having this argument with a gay Republican in Congress being like, I don't understand how, like, you know, you can still be a Republican. You know, like, he was arguing against him for how he's a member of his party based on a social issue. And they had on Steve Gunderson, who was a Wisconsin congressman, who was an openly gay Republican in Congress when DOMA was on the floor. And he voted the way he wanted to. So it's not, I think that this episode, just like his commentary, really highlighted on a lot of things that I wanted to say in so many better words, probably because he has to defend his position on a lot of things on a very open platform throughout his entire career, because people are going to constantly be coming at you being like, if you introduce yourself at a cocktail party, let's say you're in Washington, D.C., and instead of like where you're at a college party and people are like, oh, what are your major? People are like, oh, what is your party?
Yeah, of course.
And so, you know, if you're like, oh, I'm a Republican, and then, you know, but then all of a sudden, like, 5 minutes later, you're talking to your closer friends and they overhear that, like, you talked about going to a gay bar or something that weekend. Like, people are automatically like so confused. Like, how is that possible? And that just bugs me. Like, people are complex and are not voting blindly based on their values, because once you're in Congress, something could come up that you don't agree with. And yes, you should be voting on party lines, but you don't have to if it's something that's fundamentally against everything you believe in.
See, it's interesting to me, like, what it would take to undo that reputation, because in my view, and this is relatively naive, but it comes from the gut, I guess, or the heart, is that social issues come first in talking about who a person is, whether they're morally a good person or not. Social issues come first. And so to me, it seems odd that anyone could align themselves with a party for other reasons when there are social issues that are not well handled, if you know what I mean. For example, like there might be, if there was a government issue, you know, if there were two government parties that were like very extreme, if you know what I mean, and one was like amazing about equality and feminism and gay rights and animal rights and, you know, education and all of the social issues, but they were like terrible financially and all of that kind of stuff, or, you know, there were other aspects of what they wanted to do that were, you know, considered, you know, non-beneficial. And then there was one that had like an amazing financial plan or an amazing, you know, something else that they wanted to implicate, but that they came down hard or conservative on social issues. Like, the social issues would always come first, like, for me.
But social issues are also, they're also complicated, Natalie. Like, it's not like Democratic social issues are 100% all good and Republican issues are 100% all bad. Most people don't feel like that. So, for example, I'm going to give you an example, and I don't want to talk about either of these two things because they're really touchy, but I'm just going to give you like a blanket example. So for most Mexican Americans, register as Democrat. Most of them vote Democrat. I'm going to make a blanket statement here and say most Mexicans, immigrants, are also Catholic and pro-life. So those two things are kind of in conflict, but they vote Democrat. Do you see what I mean? So it's like, it's complicated.
I get that. I totally get that. I think that that example is interesting because we're talking of, they're pro-life, but if they're voting Democrat, they're possibly not pro-life enough to the degree of protesting it being illegal for other people. I don't know. That's like an assumption. Maybe that's wrong. I feel
they've chosen, for Catholics, pro-life is different than I think for the assumption it's getting here. Like, for Catholics, pro-life is also like against the death penalty. It's pro-immigration. Yeah, yeah. And that's the big one for Mexicans, obviously, is pro-immigration. So that's why they tend to skew more Democrat.
No, I totally understand. I just think that on the flip side, like, I think that, and I think that's a totally fair, like, that's totally understandable to me. Like, both of those aspects are totally, completely, like, reasonable. I come into trouble, like, viewing it from the other point of, like, the flip of that. If, for example, if someone who was really pro a certain non-social issue that the Republicans stood for and was a Republican because of that, like, if it was something not that wasn't directly about, you know, human rights and equality, but that they were like, oh, well, like, you know, the equality thing, you know, the human rights stuff is just stuff that I don't, you know, have to deal with. I don't necessarily agree with, but I believe so much in this other thing that they're doing that I'm still going to stick with that. But to me, because there's nothing more important than the human rights and the social issues on a moral level, I don't understand how someone could be like, oh, I don't agree with the moral, I don't agree with the social issues, but I agree with other stuff, so I'm going to stick with it. I don't understand how that is like a thing, or like, I don't understand how that's like something that people think is okay, or like what it would take to get rid of the reputation that it is, you know, that all Democrats are.
That's where you have to get the candidates, the right candidates in there. So right now, Trump's doing a lot of damage to the Republican Party. And if you go up to someone who is like, let's say, for example, like I went out to dinner. This was in January, like early this year, before the debates and all the nonsense, when Trump was being considered for the candidacy and people were dropping like flies. And, you know, it was starting to get kind of what we thought was scary then is now our living nightmare now. But all of my friends that I was out with are Republicans. I am the only Democrat in the group that I was with. And they are all great people. two of them are gay, and they're all very conscious of the social implications of their vote, but they know, like, they trust enough in the swaying of way things are going to vote and way people are going to vote that, you know, candidates are changing, maybe not the big candidates who are getting elected by the Republican Party, but the only way to get people to realize that there is a change in the Republican Party is to get the right people in the seats. So that comes down to local elections, and it comes down to getting the right people in Congress and getting the right people in the House. And then on top of that, then you can move up in the offices and get the right candidate on the ballot eventually. But what's happening is you're getting a Ted Cruz or you're getting a Donald Trump on the ticket, and that's setting everyone back, because now Republicans are afraid to be like at that same party, be like, oh, I'm Republican. And people are automatically like, how can you vote for Trump? And they're like, well, I might not be. You know, it's like it's one of those things right now where people are so afraid to even say that they're Republican because they don't agree with what Trump's doing and they don't agree with what some of the more extreme candidates are doing. They're basically turning into Chris Christie, where they're just hiding and not saying anything. They're just standing in the back because they're terrified.
Because I assume these parties weren't founded on the idea of being, you know, terrible people, you know, like I assume they were not founded on the ideal of like, we're going to oppress people, you know, that was not the initial aim of the Republican Party, I presume.
Yeah, so
and president was Abraham.
Yeah, this is what I was gonna that say. Is, like, wasn't Abraham Lincoln a Republican?
Yeah, that is exactly what I was gonna say, because in the West Wing episode that I was talking about, Steve Gunderson says, I'm a Lincoln Republican. And, you know, that's what I think the Lincoln Republicans are, the Republicans that need to, like, be like, okay, let's band together a little bit and get something going and reignite the party, because there's just such a bad shadow cast on the Republican Party. And that's my biggest gripe, is that I am friends with people who work in Washington as Republicans, and they are not awful people. But when I'm with all my Democrat friends and they just want to bash Republicans, I feel like I'm always trying to, you know, they think I'm playing devil's advocate, but I'm not. I'm actually just supporting them a little bit. Like, I'm trying to, like, cross enemy lines, I feel like, because Democrats are a rowdy bunch, and they will throw.
Yeah.
Our biggest thing is to throw the social issues into play. That is it's my nature too. I want to say, like, well, how can you say to my friend standing next to me that they can't do what they want to do? That is a huge thing that I will say as well when I'm with my friends. But it's another thing to be like, okay, but stop saying that, you know, all of my other group of friends are the devil, because they're not.
Yes, because villainizing people is what's kind of gotten us into this mess in the first place.
I feel like that this, you know, that we've been through a long period of time in the world where these social issues were up for debate when they shouldn't have been. And I'm hoping, praying that we get past the time where the social issues are up for debate, if you know what I mean, where things, you know, like whether we're going to be racist or homophobic are not political matters, you know, that we're past that as a society. And that they're not things that would come into play with politics, because that we take it as a for granted that these human rights, you know, women's rights, gay rights, various other, you know, things like immigration, you know, refugees, education, that these kind of things, that it is in some way that we get to the point where that's not something we argue over anymore, if you know what I mean. That's somewhere where, like, we've all advanced as people and decided that people should have rights and that it should not break their bank and stuff like that. And I feel like once we got to that point, if possible, that then, you know, the party, you know, political issues could literally become political issues in terms of how best to maintain those things or how best to run the country and international trade and you know, managing the finances of the government, as opposed to fighting over, like, whether people should have rights. And I do feel like that the social issues do make or break people's opinions of the parties, but I feel like it might take those social issues all being agreed upon and not something argued over anymore by both parties to get us past that, like, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's really naive, though.
I think it's optimistic and a good way to end that section almost. Yeah, that would probably fix everything else and it'd be lovely, and let's hope we get there one day. Well, campaigners' job anyway, fixing the social things so the other stuff can just be politics. Yes.
While we're talking about campaigns, I'm going to do mine really quick.
Yeah, I was going to say, you were talking about your aggressiveness with
this. So I'm actually not a registered Democrat. I registered as independent because I didn't want these kinds of emails. But the DNC still somehow got my email. And their emails are horrifying. I hate them. They always have like an all caps message and it's always like, it's over, give up. And that's like the, that's like,
okay.
Yes. And I'm like, oh my God. It's always like, well, we lost, it's over. It's always like the world is ending is the like little header. And I'm like, I'm not going to click on that. Yes. And I'm like, I'm not going to click on that, guys. Like, I'm not. It always has terrible punctuation, flashing lights. Literally, flashing lights. Come on.
I would suggest whatever campaign email you're signed up to there, you should just unsubscribe because they are clearly bad practitioners of a campaign email. Okay.
No, this is literally the Democratic National Committee. These are the DNC. So I get Hillary Clinton emails and DNC emails. Hillary Clinton emails are annoying because I get like 10 a day, literally like 10 a day.
But there was one from Meryl Streep today. So
yes, there was one from Meryl Streep. Those are at least nice, though. They're well written and they don't scare me. The DNC emails, I also get 10 of a day, and they always are like, the world is ending, and with flashing lights on them. So,
yeah, so you should unsubscribe from those ones. They're terrifying.
So you have to register. I know there's been all
DNC, just, like, get your act together.
I know they've been, like, pushing to register to vote, and that's been, like, a big thing. Can you register?
These are for money.
Oh.
The world is ending because you didn't give us $5. It's over. Give up.
I don't even want to start diving into the money stuff because I've already mentioned like the different aspects that I think is weird that money gets spent on it. But again, we don't have people donating like money to campaigning here. Like the campaigning is not as in your face, I guess. And we don't have to sign up to any emails in order to vote for we just go and they have our name in a book and that's it. Like it's pretty basic. But yeah, we don't get donations.
I have to read you this one. The one I titled "Go Home, No Hope Left."
What?
That's the email letter.
Why? Why? I don't understand.
Well, do you see how our country is swayed? Because this would work on so many people.
Another one in all caps. Quadruple your gift. We just lost everything.
On a professional level, this pains me so much.
But this is why we have
campaign emails for a living.
This is what the DNC is sending to everybody.
Why are they asking for money?
That is terrible.
So they can like run ads and stuff.
I think the government here gives each party a bit of money and that's what they get to spend and that's it. They're like, here's your $5 for campaigning and that's it. It's actually like, why the issue, like they were going to put the gay marriage bill to a public vote and they were going to fund each side $7.5 million or something like that. And everyone was like, no, because they didn't want $7.5 million to be going to people, like a no campaign, if you know what I mean, like a homophobic campaign. And anyway, it ended up getting blocked. But I don't know. Like, I feel like maybe there's some private behind the scenes, like dodgy funding here, but there's not like public funding for campaigning. Anyway, that's really weird.
It's a happy stuff.
That's really strange. Hopefully those emails will stop coming soon. Ariana, you haven't written anything happy. What are you happy about? What's your hype for the election or come out of the cycle?
The best thing to come out of this election is that now when I tell people, like, now when I tell white people, I'm like, no, racism still exists. Now they believe me. They didn't believe me in 2015 or 2014, but now they believe me. So
that's a really depressing hype.
I totally get what you mean. And we had that a couple of years ago with Australia because Australia is pretty racist. And we had a recent prime minister who was just like so bad. And everyone around the world was like, I got asked recently when I was in the UK in April, I went out this club and I met this French girl and we were sort of standing on the street with my friend and she was like, oh, you're from Australia. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, is it true? And I thought she was going to say something about Crocodile Dundee or like some wanky. She's like, is it true Australia is really racist? And I was like, oh, I was like, Jesus. I was like, you're not wrong. But wow. We do have some pretty severe problems. As a nation, we're very like, we had a lot of, you know, we have a lot of socialist views that we've grown up with, which are fine, like especially healthcare and education, like university and healthcare is both government funded. But yeah, there are some racism problems and I couldn't believe that. But America, I totally get what you mean, Ariana, in terms of people like denying, especially white people, denying that racism is still a thing. And I think that one of the problems with someone like Trump, I mean, yes, I think it is a very good thing that people have been alerted to the fact that, wow, there are all of these people out there who have just been waiting for someone to have a platform, you know, for them to point at and be like, yeah, racism, I am also like that. And I think Brexit had the same issue. I think it's that there is now putting these things on platforms that have allowed, you know, even if it's not actually all of those people, but the crazy minority or however many there are feel validated by what they're seeing and are therefore more dangerous because of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. My other happy hype is Trevor Noah's dimples that I love and that I've gotten to see a lot of this election because I love watching.
Have you been watching Full Frontal with Samantha Bee?
I have been, yes.
So good. Just love
it. It's very good.
You guys have a lot of late night shows, like a lot. All right. So that's the only good thing for you about this election so far. I'll be happy when it's over.
The DNC was great. The convention was great. It really pumped me up. It's really exciting, which leads into, I think, Natalie's. Yeah. What else have I liked?
I feel like the Obamas deserve a shout out.
Yes. The Obamas and our other first family, Beyonce and Jay-Z, also deserve a shout out.
I feel like the Obamas have handled this with such, like, amazing, like...
I just love them.
Like, amazing...
Yes, with such grace.
Grace and, like, complete, like, lack of fucks, if you know what I mean. Like, they're not even, they're not even trying to be, like, you know, like, polite or anything like that. Yeah. And, like, the way they talk, they're like, y'all are crazy. Like, this is not a thing.
How
like,
is this happening?
And I just love that, like, it's that they're both completely on point about what they're wanting to say. At both that and completely, like... You know,
they're so cool.
No professional upholding of like, you know, now we must be like this. But they're complete, like, it's like the best, like, all panic stations, you know, commanding guys, yes. What the hell is wrong with your situation?
You're so right, Natalie, because they never look flustered. They're just like, no, this too shall pass. Like, don't worry. Like, like, we're taking care of the nation. Like, don't worry too much.
Like, and they have they play such good different roles. Like, Barack plays, like, the, seriously, this is what you guys are doing? And then Michelle's there being so genuine and heartfelt and, like, calling Trump out in the best way. And then Obama's just in the background going, like, but really? Really? This is who you're going to go for next?
Yeah.
So the fact good.
There's no professional face to it, but it doesn't make them look unprofessional. It's just so real, if you know what I mean. Like, their concern is obviously so real, but it's so well handled, and I just love it. I love them.
And I love how this has made him feel so much. Today there was he feels very much like the commander-in-chief during all of this. Like, today, today at a Hillary Clinton rally, a Trump supporter showed up and, like, started booing him. And he was like, no, all of you be quiet. Like, he had a right to be here, and he's elderly, and he served our country, and he's just exercising his right to be here. So don't boo, vote. It was just very much like a parent reprimanding, like, we have to, you know? We have to unite. I'm everybody's yeah. president.
Oh, yeah.
Even that guy who hates me, I'm his president too.
Yeah. So.
He's a classy guy.
He's so good. Oh, God. Shame about the whole two-term situation. I mean, okay, George Washington, you wanted to retire, but whatever. still, where's that left us now, George Washington?
We'll be grateful if Donald Trump is elected. We'll be grateful for the two cycles.
That is true.
That's true. Clearly the highlight of the election cycle for me and the world was the DNC event in Brooklyn, in which Bill Clinton got to express his true love for balloons and was delighted in the surprise balloon display offered to his wife. And yeah, I just feel like I just never expected to see this from him. Has this been like an ongoing thing? Like, has he had a secret balloon fetish for a long time?
Okay. Natalie, I literally turned to my mom and was like, is he getting Alzheimer's? And my mom goes, no, he's always been like this.
I had a friend in high school when we were about 14, 15, who had a full-on crush on him. I mean, like, I understand, you know, Justin Trudeau, I get it. But it was Bill Clinton in, like, the late 90s. It was before the Bush election. She had, like, cut out pictures of him and stuff in her school diary. Oh, I don't know whether it was a joke. She was kind of weird. So it could have literally been, like, that she was trolling everyone or that she kind of admired him and then played it off as a joke. And it was really, like, so she was really into him. Maybe she knew something we didn't or something. Maybe she knew about the balloons. but, yeah, so he's always been like this. What did she mean, Ariana? Like, has he always been, like, ridiculously derpy or something? Like, what happened?
Well, because also he speaks really slowly. And I guess I had, like, never seen him give a speech before or I was, like, too young to remember. But he was, like, speaking really slowly and then he played with the balloons. My mom was just like, no, that's just, like, the way he talks and, like, the way he is.
You probably wouldn't have seen it, Nat, because you're not as avid a watcher of the Daily Show as Ariana and probably Britney. But he went on the Daily Show not long after the DNC, and he did this, like, a 10-minute really in-depth policy speech, probably about economics or something, I can't remember. And then at the end, in the closing, like, credits, balloons fell from the ceiling, and it was pretty joyful.
Poor Bill.
For everyone.
This is what it's going to be known for the, you know, the whole of his first ladyship. He's going to be, like, balloon guy. So that's going to be interesting. So do we know what he'll be called when he is the first lady?
First dude.
He's the first gentleman. I mean, he'll be President Clinton because they're always president forever, right? Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
If he'd never been the president and he was just a man married to Hillary Clinton and she was the president, what would he be called?
The first man? I don't know.
Is it first gentleman?
I think it would be first gentleman.
Yeah, I think first gentleman.
I think it's the first gentleman.
Yeah.
Because that's the equivalent of first lady.
Yeah, you would think. Yeah, I'm interested to see what he does with himself when Hillary is the president. Like, if he continues to, you know, have a political role or if he will have the same duties as a first lady would in terms of you know, showing up to be a representative of the first family or what will happen there. But this is like a really, I'm just like gonna go for the gut here. Has Monica Lewinsky endorsed Hillary?
She stays silent throughout the entire process.
I mean, I would if I was her as well. Like, she's a real smart girl, and I saw her TED speech, which was great.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, you know, coming out and saying anything at all would be like really, it would make more drama than she clearly wants. She clearly wants to be left the hell alone, if you know what I mean. But God, imagine if she did. It would be such a victory for people trying to pit women against each other and all of that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I was just curious whether anything had happened there.
I feel like...
Sorry, that's breaking up. Sorry, do you want to start from again whatever you were going to say about my uneducated point about Monica Lewinsky?
Oh, no. I just think that she, at some point, she did say that she was voting for her. It wasn't like a big thing. She was just like, yeah, I'm not voting for Trump. I'm voting for her.
Yeah.
I just see that. Yeah. That's cool.
she's it would just be a very interesting situation, which might make a bit of an impression, but my idea is that she does not want to make a bit of an impression, which is fair enough. Yeah, so Bill Clinton will be the first gentleman of balloons pretty soon, hopefully. and that should be good. That should be good for
Secretary
everyone.
Secretary of balloons.
Secretary of balloons. I think that's probably. I'm so glad this is going to be how he goes down in history, as the husband of the first lady president who's obsessed with balloons. I mean, I don't think he's going to make for as amazing gifts as 8 years of Obama being Obama, but we did get some pretty good mileage out of it so far. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it's been very cute to watch from afar. I've also enjoyed during this election cycle some of the celebrity videos. The celebrity endorsements and stuff are a bit of a stressful situation. Obviously, we've spoken about one or two that have been hugely problematic, you know, with Susan Sarandon, and then some of them I found, you know, it's good to know. I don't know if people should be making calls based on celebrities. I guess it's kind of good to know, you know, if a celebrity that you like is like got the same values as you. But some of the videos I've enjoyed for entertainment value. However, it's been a lot. It's been a lot on this election cycle. I think everyone is panicking. So, I don't know. Brittany, did I see before you changed yours that you did not like the celebrity endorsements?
I like them to a degree. So, am I talking about this now or no? That was a weird lead-in, if it wasn't supposed to be a lead-in.
Oh, do you mean to your...
do you want me to talk about that or no?
I wasn't necessarily intending that. I was more that you said something about, like, celebrities on the campaign trail, I think.
Oh, yeah. So, like, the celebrities who take time off of doing everything else in their lives to campaign full-time. So my biggest gripe in that regard is actually a huge part of my hype. So I have muted and blocked Deborah Messing. Basically, she is the biggest Hillary supporter that I can think of when it comes to celebrities going crazy for Hillary. And she had a famous fight with Susan Sarandon on Twitter.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's going to be the subject of Ryan Murphy's feud in about 10 years, so stay tuned. But her campaign tactics just drive me a little crazy. She is very aggressive and angry, and if it's like her way or the highway type of deal, and that bugs me a lot because I love Deb, I really do, but I can't deal with it most of the time. So she is on permanent mute until after the election, and maybe when Hillary wins, maybe a month after that, just so she can calm down.
Oh my god.
But yeah, so she is taken off of, like, her show got canceled and all this other stuff, but she really threw herself into the campaign, and it's become her full-time job. So she's constantly on the trail, she's out, she's campaigning, she's working, she's doing all this stuff. But the greatest gift that this election has given me is a Will and Grace reunion. And it happened, and it was filmed, and it was wonderful, and it stressed me out for 24 straight hours when they were dropping hints, and there were pictures from the set, and they were together, and I didn't know why they were together, and I recognized, like, a wall from the apartment, and I was freaking out, and it was amazing and awesome, and it was for Hillary, but also just to get people out to go register to vote. That was the big thing behind it. They played off Karen as being a Trump supporter and Jack as the undecided swing state voter, and basically what people could do to get people to vote and see their sides of things. And, you know, Deb in that role was great because she wasn't playing. She was trying to hold back giving too much Deborah Messing, but also playing Grace really well, like getting facts wrong about Hillary Clinton and, like, you know, just being blind to certain things. And, you know, they were real, they just fell back into their characters. And then they got together again at an event for Hillary and did like a tribute thing. And now they're in talks of getting some more revival stuff together. So listen, it made my life a little bit brighter. That, and speaking of Bill and insane crushes, I side with Leslie Knope on the Joe Biden attraction.
Oh, God.
I think he is so great, and we got a lot of great gifts out of this election, and just hearing Joe talk is sometimes just so amazing. Like, he was being interviewed when the Anthony Weiner stuff came out, and they were like, oh, well, these new emails connected. And he's like, what emails? We've been through this already. Like, he's so frustrated with it. And then they're like, and he's like, well, what are they connected to? And the reporter on air said, oh, Anthony Weiner. And he goes, oh, Jesus, no. Just like, he's so fed up with it and tired. And he put on his sunglasses the other day. And it makes me so happy. So whenever I need a break, I'll watch Joe Biden go to the Washington, D.C. Costco opening. It is my favorite Joe Biden video to ever exist. He's just like picking up pies.
Saying something.
Don't think I've ever seen a Joe Biden video. I didn't know that they were a thing, like in terms of like a
they're
comfort.
Not.
Like,
they're not. This is just one that exists. He opened a Costco in Washington, D.C. and he bought some pies and... It's amazing.
Could be good for him.
Sounds like something he'd do.
Anything else good that anyone else has like really felt like this election cycle has put into the world that is now the world is better for than it was before?
I mean, it got me more invested in politics. I mean, I was invested beforehand, but now I feel like I actively have to be really aggressive about my like getting myself to pay attention, which I think is a good thing, because before it was like when Obama was running for re-election, it was like, okay, no brainer, it's Obama.
This is cool. We know this is good.
But yeah. I mean, like after the fact, I started paying attention to Mitt Romney because like I was just so blind to being like, well, that's not who I'm voting for, so it doesn't matter. Whereas now I'm like so actively tuned in to what the Republican Party is doing, and I think that is going to inform me going forward. Like, it doesn't matter who the Democrat is that's running. I have to pay attention to the other side as well because I know how bad it can be. Whereas, like, so, like, now, I mean, I've said this more times than you could have ever guessed I would have ever said in my life. Is I've never said I miss Mitt Romney so many times this election cycle just because I was just, like, I felt like that was an election. It was good. It was exciting, but it was also not terrifying. And like, if Mitt Romney won, I didn't feel like the world was going to end.
Like that he was going to nuke a country or something, you know?
Exactly.
Well, even just like less than that, I'm worried, like after seeing what happened with Brexit and like the economy falling apart, like that's what I'm, that's the immediate worry that has me worried. Like the next day, like,
I was just going to say, I say that I'm out here because I love Hillary so much. That's part of it. But mostly, I just need an election to go well because our general last year did not go well. And then we had Brexit. And I'm like, can I just have a win? And if the win happens to be Hillary, that makes it even better.
Yeah. I will say this is the first time I've felt this excited for a candidate, which I know is like seems weird because a lot of people are like, oh, Hillary sucks. But like, I love her. And I think it's because I feel like I can relate to her because like Obama's just so cool and I was like never cool, but like Hillary's so awkward and nerdy.
Hillary is Hermione Granger and I'm also Hermione Granger.
And that's why I'm like, oh, I get you, Hillary, like, it's okay.
What's the problem? Like, is she not a good speaker or something? She's fine. Like, I don't understand what the problem is.
That's opening a can of worms that we should have gotten into
forever.
Yeah,
but my hype is going to be like the opposite of that. So we can talk about what's great about her.
In one sentence, what is people's problems? Like, not their like hyperbole, like she's a witch or she's as bad as Trump. Like, what is their problem with her?
My answer to that would be she's been in politics for a very, very long time. And during that time, the Republican Party has hated her right from the start. And they have spent a lot of time like basically trying to tear her down. And I would say that a lot of those rumors and things have stuck, and that's fed into a lot of the narratives. And the other part of it is because a lot of people just don't have a, they don't trust establishment politicians in that way. And because she's been around for so long, people think that she must have done something wrong. And then stuff like the email narratives and things like that feeds into it. There are also disagreements with where she is on policy, but I don't think that feeds into the hatred. I think the hatred feeds into the narrative that's formed around her. And then the rumor mongering and everything else that's been a part of it. That'd be
Ariana, you mentioned like Obama being cool. Like, is Hillary not cool?
No. Well, like, Obama's very charismatic, and even like her husband is very charismatic, and she's just not. She's not a good speaker, really. I mean, to be fair, she's not a great speaker. That's not what makes her a good politician. She's better at, you know, like one-on-one and actually talking to people and passing policy and working across the aisle and lots of things Megan's going to talk about. But I think also she seems a little bit reserved, I think, to people. But I think also a lot of that has to do with she was, you know, a woman in a man's world. And I think we all kind of can understand how that feels as women. We've all been in that position at some point. And you do feel like you have to make yourself just like not make waves. And so like you can't be like as exciting, you know, you don't want to make yourself seem frantic.
They wouldn't,
or, like,
yeah, like if you were like, oh, I'm gonna be like sassy like Obama, they wouldn't take you seriously.
They don't take you seriously, or they're like you're a bitch, or you're like something, so you're a nag, you know, all of those things. So I think she's cultivated this persona to keep herself you know, to make herself seem like an actual person that they can interact with other politicians. And maybe that's made her seem reserved to people because she's had to develop that.
Well, Megan, your hype was going to be Hillary herself in terms of some things that people apparently don't know too much about that might, you know, be likable. What did you want to talk about with her?
So my idea from this came from, I work for like a very left-wing organization, and I have a lot of friends who are left-wing who don't like Hillary because they have this idea of her being like really centrist and whatnot. And I don't think that's true, not least because her voting record in the Senate was super liberal and all of that. And recently a friend at work was like, I want to put photos up on my wall of like awesome feminists. And I was like, Hillary Clinton. She was like, not Hillary, because she hates Hillary. And I know the kind of things that my friend likes. And so I basically pranked her because I'm really cool in that I messaged her.
Megan's
really
quite competitive, in case that's something that hasn't come up yet. She likes to prove things.
Like, I do.
You know, wonder you like Hillary.
Proving them.
But she cares a lot about race issues, my friend Rachel, which is obviously very important. I do too. And so I messaged her at work, and I sent her this message, and I was like, I thought of this really cool person for your feminist wall. She's this lawyer who in the 70s went undercover in the deep south of America. She posed as like a white mom who wanted to enroll her kids in school, but she wanted to make sure the school was still segregated first. So she did it to expose segregation in school, and it was really awesome. And my friend Rachel was like, wow, who was she? What's her name? And I was like, Hillary Clinton. Boom, nailed it. And my friend was like, fine, okay, that's pretty cool. So I basically have this list, some of which fits that criteria, and some which is just like good things about Hillary and why I think she'd be a good president. But it's essentially a list of things that might persuade people who are like voting for her because she's not Trump to feel a bit more enthusiastic about their vote, and also just stuff that
as
I think,
as opposed to like, I guess I'll vote for her, like, yeah, as opposed to being exactly like, yeah, I want to vote for her.
Yeah, so that's, and it's pretty long, so I figure I'll just like whiz through it really quickly because,
oh my god,
talk about Hillary a lot.
How long?
I'm not gonna say, I'm just gonna talk. So the first thing that I had was the quote that a lot of you have probably heard of, but it's just an awesome quote. And it was in an interview when she became First Lady of Arkansas. And she said, I suppose I could have stayed home and baked cookies and had teas, but what I decided to do was fulfill my profession, which I entered before my husband was in public life, which is just an awesome quote. A couple of things about like LGBT rights. So in 2004, Gavin Newsom, a Democratic politician, he was California's lieutenant governor. And in 2004, he ordered the city clerk to give same-sex same-sex couples' marriage licenses. And the DNC at the time were basically, like, outraged. They were like, you're ruining John Kerry's chance at running for president. You should have stayed quiet on this. It's not the right time to bring it up. His speech at the convention was cancelled. Loads of Democrats refused to be photographed with him or in the same room with him. And the only Democrat in 2004 that, like, interacted with him was Hillary Clinton. She did an event with him in 2004 and she publicly supported him. So that was pretty cool. She was the first presidential candidate to march in Pride this year, but she'd actually marched in a couple of times already. So that's, you know, similar to Justin Trudeau and his Pride march, pretty good thing. When she was Secretary of State, she passed these amazing transgender passport laws where essentially, because states all have different ways of requesting IDs and getting IDs, it's really hard for transgender people to change their gender on state driving license IDs and actually have one that matches them. So she basically changed the laws of passports as Secretary of State, because that's under her remit, to make it way easier for transgendered people to change the gender on their passport. Let me see. She founded the first rape crisis counseling hotline in Arkansas. She co-sponsored a bill requiring pharmaceutical companies to do specific research on the effects their drugs have on children and label accordingly, because that's not something people used to do in the past. Before 1975, US public schools accommodated only 1 out of 5 children with disabilities. And until that time, lots of states actually had laws that explicitly excluded children with certain types of disabilities from attending public school. She researched and prepared a report for that that was like a major catalyst for the US making that illegal, meaning that disabled children, you had to make sure that your school was suitable and allowed disabled children to go to. In 2012, she negotiated an unexpected ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas. And then a really cool thing for me is that the State Department, before she was there, did not track like what money in USAID and anything was spent on women-focused programs and things to really help women across the world. In 2012, the State Department in the US spent $1.2 billion in programs specifically targeting women. And that, I think, is the end of my long list of Hillary hypes, things you might not know that she did that was really cool and very progressive, and she's awesome.
Thank you for that. How do you guys feel about that?
I feel great because I loved her already.
Same.
You just feel validated.
Yes, cool. I do.
So that's probably a good point to move on to close up the episode. Obviously, this has been pretty intense in terms of a pretty intense situation that is happening this upcoming week. And Megan is going to actually, we're going to end the episode in a traditional way with an ask. With a two truths and a lie and an ask us anything, hashtag ANA question. So first of all, the two truths and a lie we're throwing to Megan, and she may have prepared somewhat of an unusual one given the theme. So Megan, did you want to do that? Like, have you prepared one of the options that we spoke about?
I have, yeah. So basically, because Nat and I have known each other for about 10 years, I was like, Nat has an unfair disadvantage if I do two truths and a lie, because there are very few things about me that Nat doesn't know. So she suggested, which I thought was an awesome idea, that I do two truths and a lie about Hillary Clinton. Do I just go straight into it?
So yeah, so Nat, what you're doing is you're saying your three facts as if they were all true and we have to guess which one is the lie.
All right, so Hillary Clinton. She once outdrank Senator John McCain. She applied to work at NASA, and she once punched someone in defense of a baby rabbit.
I'm guessing NASA is the lie.
I'm going to go with McCain.
Then I'm going to go with the punch. One of us is right.
Okay, so Nat is right, technically, because when she was 14, she wrote a letter to NASA to say that she was interested in applying, but she was then told they were not accepting girls as astronauts, and she was furious and never properly applied.
See, I knew that there was a NASA letter, and I was like, yeah, so that's definitely true.
I knew the rabbit was true, which is a great story.
So good.
But, can you tell this story?
Yeah, so it's hilarious. This Breitbart reporter, I think it's Breitbart reporter is more for, and that's like a super, super right-wing alt-right press, basically wrote a tell-all book about Hillary. And in this book, he included this thing about how she's like, basically,
when she was 12 or so.
Yeah. And he used it as an example of why she's bad, to say she's really like combative and angry. But it's actually like everyone's like, oh my God, that's an awesome story. So here's the excerpt from the book. Hillary's combative behavior is nothing new. She's been all that way all her life. For my 2005 book, The Truth About Hillary, I interviewed Hillary's grammar school classmate, Jim Urogian, who told me the story of being ordered by Hillary to guard a warren of baby rabbits and not give any of them away to neighborhood boys. When he did, recalls Urogian, Hillary hauled off and punched me in the nose.
So, yeah.
Oh, wait, I actually knew that story. I think I retweeted that story.
Pretty good story.
Yeah, I can't believe that this person, like, literally wrote a book being like, oh, my God, what a terrible person she is. She punched someone in the face because that person was torturing, like giving rabbits to neighborhood boys to torture. It's like, you really think that this
she's
is, like,
such a monster. Weird...
Oh, my God, she is Hermione Granger. Like, that's she's totally like, Hermione yeah. punching Draco.
She's Hermione.
So misguided that anyone thinks that that's a negative thing. Okay, so...
When did she outdrink John McCain?
It was in 2004, when they were both senators. They were touring Estonia for, I don't know, whatever reason. And they sat down at a restaurant and basically with like taking in turns to take shots of vodka. And she won the game. She drank more shots of vodka than John McCain.
I feel like he's on a lot of blood thinner, so he's probably could have died in that situation.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah, we'll let him off.
Oh my God. Okay, so the... That's fantastic. The question
I put a lot of effort into it.
The question of the day, we didn't have much turnaround between this and the last episode, so I have a question from Brooke, our compatriot on this show, just asking, what did she ask? She said, basically, if Trump wins, we can officially relocate things to Australia, right? And I guess that's like a metaphorical question, because Trump's not going to win. No one's going to let that happen, I really hope. But also, I don't think you guys want to come here. Like, we're not, like, we don't have guns, and that's awesome. Like, we don't have weird delusions about having, like, guns.
But have terrifying spiders.
Our government's not great. I think that you should all just go to Canada. And, like,
until I won't have a choice. I'm going to be deported, so I will be sent south. So,
I'll dig a hole in the wall.
Unless Justin Trudeau decides to, like, build a wall as well, which I don't think he will, you know, to stop the Americans. But Canada has all of the benefits. At the moment, it's got a pretty good deal. As far as the English-speaking Western, like, large nations, you know, which it's got probably got the best deal at the moment out of anyone in terms of the healthcare and social rights, at least it's got the best deal currently. So anyone who... is scared of Trump, Canada's probably your best option. Britain's going down the shithole and I'm really upset about it. Australia is like always mildly crappy. We've got a lot of good things and a lot of, like I said, a lot of socialized advantages here, but there is some like kind of not great stuff as well. It just doesn't affect us as much on a day-to-day level as some of the big deal American stuff does. I think Canada's got the best deal at the moment. So I suggest everyone goes there until you invade Canada enough that Justin Trudeau stops being adorable and decides to build his own wall to keep you all out. And then he'll be like, see how it feels. But no, Ariana's not going to get deported. We're going to be okay. I hope. But everyone should go and vote, I think. And as I said, I mean, this is not my election. I can't vote. Megan can't vote. It's very much going to affect the world, however you do decide. And as I mentioned, my only thing to say, apart from all of the other ridiculous things I've said, is that I very strongly believe in using your vote to keep the worst party out, regardless of who that means you end up having to vote for, even if it wasn't your first choice. Maybe not everyone thinks that way, but I feel like that's the best option, and it's certainly the best option in this election. So good luck to you all. Anyone got any further closing thoughts on what's going to happen this week?
Just go vote and then buy a pint of ice cream and sit in front of your TV watching your news anchor of choice for the foreseeable rest of the day. Oh my god!
What are you guys
gonna be in Texas on election night?
I don't know what I'm gonna do because I live with a Trump supporter.
Oh, really?
I think my roommate is. I think she's like low key. So.
I genuinely don't. I mean, it's a whole nother kettle of fish, but I don't understand, like, how people are like, yeah, that sounds legit, like, about anything. So,
I'll probably just lock myself in my room, watch Twitter.
Maybe he'll be arrested between now and then, or, like, some other story, like the grabbing will come out that's even worse.
I mean, that's the dream, isn't it?
If that didn't get him, I don't understand how nothing did. If you know what
nothing
I mean, like I don't.
Will. He said it himself. He could stand in Times Square and shoot somebody.
Holy shit! How is he not arrested? Like I don't understand. Like he's.
It's okay. Beyonce's fixing it. She's fixing it.
Okay. All right, Brittany. What are you doing Tuesday night.
What am I doing Tuesday night?
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go vote before I have to go to work because I don't have off. And then I am going to go straight home and I'm picking up some Ben and Jerry's almond milk ice cream because I can't have regular ice cream. And I'm literally just going to eat that for dinner and get nervous every time the terrifying CNN projection music plays and Wolf they cut to Wolf Blitzer because then that means a state has been called.
Oh my God. Speaking of, I don't want to harp on again about the voting differences, but why is it not on a weekend? We have ours on like a weekend, like so that people don't have to take
I
off
don't
work.
Know. That is an issue.
We have ours on the first Thursday of May in the same way that you have yours the first Tuesday of November. And like people say the weekends, but actually in some ways there's lots of people that do work on weekends and they work long shifts. So I think actually a lot of people having it on the weekend makes no difference.
Yeah, plus a lot of companies really they do give off. Schools like public schools are closed.
Plus, actually, in the US, not in the UK and Australia, but little known voting fact in the US, your work, if your polling station is more than like an hour away from your work is legally required to give
they
you.
They have to give you. The
yeah,
time.
Give you time off to go vote.
I suppose that's good.
Mine is 45 minutes, so just under the wire.
Are you still coming into Manhattan at all for work, Brittany?
No, I work solely in New Jersey now.
Okay, I was going to say, because Megan's there, and you can say hi, but you're not there.
No.
That's okay. All right. So I guess that's going to be fun. One of you's written a large statement to end up here. Who wrote this?
That was me, because I feel like it would be terrible if we ended without finding out all of Megan's information so we can stop her forever because she's so smart.
That's true. Megan, look at that. You're an inspiration to these people. Sorry, I just find it hilarious. I just find it hilarious because of the majority of my conversations with Megan are not this intelligent. I'll just put it that way.
She is really intelligent. She took over like splitting all of the checks when we were out to dinner. She's very smart.
She's very efficient. Yes, I suppose that's true. Megan, is your Twitter public?
Yeah, my Twitter is public. It's Mia Fain, which is spelled MIRFAIN, and to undo any
without laughing,
and to undo any thoughts of how intelligent I am. That is my name in Elvish. So now you know, Megan in Elvish is Mia Fain, MIRFAIN. Lord of the Rings Elvish, not like Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream Elvish.
Did you look at that? I just found you. Are you from Kent?
Yes, I am. Just outside of London.
So, yeah, if you would like to follow Megan and talk to her about the election or anything else, you can do that. And then, yeah, I guess I'll be at work at the university. We're having a live screening of the election upstairs in the student bar, though. So, like, it'll be Wednesday morning for us and we're going to have that on there because the whole world cares very deeply. I bet you guys wouldn't sit around watching the elections for other countries in America. But it's going to be an interesting day and I'm really worried about it. But I have this intrinsic like lack of worry because I feel so sure that Trump can't win, but I feel like that's a delusion, if you know what I mean. Like, I feel
it's
like
it's a delusion.
I'm like, there's no possible way.
Don't tell people this. Everyone has to vote. It is so important.
Yes, you have to vote.
I think my delusion is coming from the fact that in my head everyone does vote, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I think it was like, I feel like if someone was as extreme as Trump in a country where it was compulsory, he wouldn't have a chance because people would be like, what the hell? Like, no. But I feel like if people are abstaining because they don't believe in either party or if, you know, like, I feel like that there is a real problem with him, obviously. So vote in the election, do whatever
everyone.
It takes to vote. Obviously, we are not hoping that Trump gets in, so cast your vote to help that happen if you agree. If you don't, you probably weren't listening to this episode, to be honest. You probably would have left at the beginning. So,
or at least right around the point I started criticising Susan Sarandon and Jill Stein.
Yeah, I hope that you – yeah, I think that that's important. I think that maybe you don't like being told this by a bunch of people that are not American citizens as well. But I think that, yeah – I'm not too worried that there's any Trump listeners here. I am worried that there are people who are listening who, you know, might not want to vote for Hillary and therefore don't, as I said, vote.
But think of the rabbits.
Use it to keep the worst party out. That's all we gotta say. But okay, we'll finish up now, I guess. It's very late. Everyone stayed up very late to do this recording. Megan's off to
be up in 4.5 hours to get on a bus to Philadelphia
to help save your country in Philadelphia. So so I hope you guys enjoyed hearing from her about that, and that you probably didn't enjoy hearing from me, but I was here on purpose to be the uninformed foreigner asking questions that didn't make any sense. So I hope I served that role correctly. Yeah, good luck, guys. Hopefully it's gonna be good. I really, 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 really hope that Hillary wins the election and that Trump does not. I really fear what he might do. I feel like it's completely insane. I feel like that we all know this. So, yeah. Sure. Good night, everyone.
Yeah.
Good luck.
I'm gonna go sleep. Good morning, Nat.
Yeah. Good luck. Goodbye. And
au revoir.
See you all later. See you on the other side of the wall or whatever. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Maybe it's because I changed the speaker. Hang on.
While you're doing that, I'm just going to grab a jumper. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Oh, Megan. All right. Hang on.
Call it a jumper, just like Harry Potter.
Oh, Nat, while you're doing that, I'll tell you the story.
Yeah.
So I was talking to my mom yesterday, and she was like, oh, I started playing that podcast you retweeted the other day because she stalks me on Twitter so she can read my articles.
Oh, no.
And she's like, and I couldn't really understand your British friend. And I'm like, Natalie's not British. She's Australian. She goes, well, I couldn't understand her, so I had to give up. And I'm like, Mom.
Wow.
I'm like, Mom, that's who's all that stuff comes to the house for. And she's like, oh. Well, it's nice to put a voice to the packages.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brittany's mom.